canine detection collaborative, a detection dog training trio with Stacey Barnett.
Hi.
Robin Grubel.
Hey there.
And Crystal Wing.
What's up?
With humor and a big dose of theory, our trio talks practical training advice and features interviews with top trainers and scientists.
It's Canine Detection Collaborative!
Hey guys, it's Stacey Barnett with Canine Detection Collaborative, and I'm here with two of my favorite people, my co-hosts, Robin Grubel.
Greetings.
And Crystal Wing.
Hello.
And we've got kind of an interesting topic because this kind of came up, and I think, Robin, I think you had a post out on Facebook, and you referred to your dog as struggling. And looking at this, I'm like, really, you know, and thinking about it, it's really interesting how we use language, right? Because when we say struggle, that word can have so many different connotations. So looking at that, you're like, from one lens, like, I don't really think that dog's struggling. So I think sometimes when we use that language, like when we think about the word struggle, are we talking about the dog is really struggling, or are we talking about something different? So that's kind of what kind of got us thinking a little bit. And
it was really interesting because we then had a whole Facebook Messenger conversation between the three of us of, well, what do you mean by struggling? And then it was like, well, what do you mean? But what's your struggle?
Yeah.
And it basically came down to, I think you guys kind of called me out. They're like, is she really struggling or is this just a lack of training? I'm like, oh, okay, it's a lack of training.
Yeah. So actually, I'm going to pull a Crystal. I'm going to ask a question.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Well, no, but it's not going to be as insightful as Crystal. It won't be as good of a question as Crystal.
Right.
I'm just going to like ask a question. How do you define struggle?
I think probably the best way for me to describe struggle is when I'm in the training phase of my generalization for my dogs, right? They know the behaviors, blah, 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 blah. And they struggle in teaching, but I'm more forgiving of struggling in teaching because we're still learning mechanics and stuff. But when we get to training, I typically hope that I am setting out a problem that pushes or advances a certain skill. And usually that word struggle comes in when a criteria shift or something comes out of left field, smacks you on the back of the head, and your dog's like, yep, I don't know what language you're speaking today, but that's not the one we speak. And so it's probably, I just got done recording a whole bunch of webinars, right? So I'm living in the land of definitions. And I would tell you that in that particular scenario, instead of being fluent or proficient, my dog fell back to being competent, and which is knows it in known locations almost or some of the time and barely none of the time in unknown locations or something of that general nature. So
you're defining your struggling dog as your competent dog.
Yes. So I went from, oh my gosh, all of a sudden what I thought was going to be a proficient dog bordering on fluent went all the way back to competent. And I'm like, well, there you go.
I think about struggle. I think it's a very universal experience. So especially it's not just dog training, clearly. And I guess I think about it in two ways because I pictured like it as a verb and I pictured it as a noun. It's a lot of just putting in the effort and it's a difficult challenge. That difficulty is often for me internal, either for myself or the dog. So sometimes it's struggling with emotions, or sometimes it's struggling because like I'm struggling because checkmate has a broken foot still. So that's a struggle. And then I think about as a noun, it's like this long-term effort. And I think that's where I always feel more struggle is in that long-term achievement. So it's the little pieces along the way. And that's where I have to really focus on enjoying the journey and enjoying that everything is bits and pieces being pulled together to create that end piece. I think it's natural to feel the struggle as a challenge, as a negative thing, but I kind of look at it as I try to see that struggle as part of the process, and I really enjoy the process. And so there's the difficulty piece. It's the challenge that's making things hard. And then there's the effort piece. You have to exert yourself, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, and then you have to persist. And that's the part about not giving up. And that's where I tend to be a person that digs in. So when it starts to get really hard, I dig in harder. And sometimes that can be a bad trait. But I appreciate that struggle across all experiences is universal. So not just for us with our detection dogs, but in our everyday lives. It's all the challenges we face. How about you?
I see struggling is where you've got a certain criteria that you're trying to achieve with your dog. And your dog is taking more repetitions than you would anticipate to be able to achieve the objective. That could be due to, could be a training thing. It could be emotional, right? It could be kind of going from Crystal's thought there, right? It could be emotional. It could be maybe something physical. Like maybe it is kind of teeing off of what Crystal was saying. But for me, I kind of see it as that gap between what my expected anticipation of what it would take to meet the criteria versus what they're actually giving me. That's what I would consider. So if a dog is struggling, if that's in excess of what I would anticipate, that's what I would think. So next question.
Look at your questions lined up.
I know.
I'm sitting there, I'm like, I actually made notes on that one.
Wow.
I know.
I'm so proud of you.
I know, but now I'm trying to look at my notes going, what in the heck was I thinking there? I don't really know. So kind of what I was thinking there is, if we think about struggling, is it, or to what degree, is it a handler issue versus a dog issue? So I'm kind of thinking of it in terms of like how I defined it, right? I defined it as the gap between what I would anticipate from the dog meeting criteria versus what they're doing. And then I have to ask myself the question about my expectations. So is it something that we're doing as trainers that is contributing to our perspective that the dog is struggling? Or is it something, or is it more dog derived, I guess is my question.
I'm just thinking about sports. I mean, the only reason I have any struggle is because I'm trying to get my maximum amount of points. I'm trying to fit into the criteria and the expectations that they're setting forward. And I feel like they keep pushing the bar further and further and further to the point that sometimes it's not healthy for the dogs even. I won't talk about confirmation.
Preach.
Definitely not recently.
I went there. When I meet people and they'll tell you about their confirmation dog and I'm like, oh, so can they still do the thing they were bred to do? And the one lady was like, absolutely. That's part of what we do. And our dogs haven't been based off of show and all of these things. And it's like, okay. So I think that's where a lot of the struggle comes in there is that the expectations that the humans are setting up for the tasks and the goals that we're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. So even for search and rescue, I can tell you with certainty in the last like several handfuls of searches, Radish has been so on. It is so fun watching her. I mean, she every single time I think that I've set something that's a little more challenging that, and I have these great plans of if something does go wrong, my contingencies are all set up. Like I'm feeling good about my training plans and my training buddies. And she just keeps nailing it. And I love it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's so good. And sometimes you're trying to set them up for a little bit of struggle so that they can learn. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's not failure, but sometimes do I set them up for failure sometimes too, knowing that those are opportunities in kind ways. So yeah, that can be another conversation. So yeah, I don't know where I went. I'm sorry. I got a little bit sidetracked because the dogs. The struggle is real.
Welcome to my world.
Can you hear them?
No.
Okay. They are so loud. I have two. Radish and Checkmate right now are laying side by side, both of them chewing on the giant Jolly Balls, just pulsing it.
Your headphones. Everything's
inside
the headphones. Yeah.
It's just pulsing. I'm like, you guys. So this is my struggle to pay attention while these two are pulsing on Jolly Balls. So here we are.
Oh, there you go. No, and back to your, is it a handler issue? Is it a dog issue? Is it, I separate them out. We can have dog struggling, handler's fine, handler struggling, dog wants you to get your poop in a group, and the team could then also be struggling in general. And some of it, as a instructor, coach type of person, you have to be able to then start teasing apart, which is it? And the interesting thing is you end up trying, I mean, I do a lot of virtual coaching. It's really, really hard to tease things apart when you can't watch team.
Yes.
Right. And so you're actually relying a lot on the narrative and the narrative that you're getting from the handler or the person training the dog to, are you really struggling? And then a lot of times I get the whole, oh my gosh, I'm struggling. My dog did this. And I'm like, how many times? And they're like, well, once, not a struggle yet.
Yeah.
You got to collect more data before it gets to officially be a struggle.
Yep. I see that too, where the dog takes like 30 seconds. Is it like a new team, like small search, 30 seconds to get to the hide instead of go straight to it? And they're like, why did it take them so long? I said, because they were problem solving. It was amazing.
They're like, what? Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
You're like, no, sometimes the letting them figure it out in this particular instance is a good thing, but you have to know when that is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's fun when I post stuff online and people will say, whoa, that looks really awesome. And I'm thinking, that was rough. That was a struggle. And it's just not knowing what the criteria is for the activity that we're trying to do. And what the dog is doing is amazing. It's just us with our weird games and weird things that we want them to do. And I even think about, I was looking at Denise did a, she's working on positions for Mondio Ring, and she did a little functional assessment, and Zen was just like a meter forward after his position changes. And this is after just beautiful work we've been watching for so long, but it was the first time without the pieces in place. And and so all these people, you know, she's like, I don't need help. You know, as we always have to say, I don't need help. I'm just showing you where we are.
Yeah.
And then, so I made sure to comment on there, but he did them all correctly.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw that and I was like, I think that's an inside joke.
Well, I mean, it's just looking at that. Well, I like that he did them all, you know, he did them all correctly.
Yeah.
We can start there. I just wish that they wouldn't creep that far forward, because someone that looks at it would go, wow, you're this many feet away and your dog's doing position changes perfectly so fast. As soon as you say them and it's the correct thing. But our criteria is even stricter that they cannot move. Their feet have to be glued to the ground. So is that a struggle for some people? It's just at the level that you are.
Right. You have to understand what the criteria is to even say whether or not. Otherwise, it looks really like amazing, right?
Yeah, I was like,
kind of like an eye without the criteria lens.
Yeah.
You're like, dang, look at you. So I kind of want to think about, is it dog or is it handler? And I want to kind of go to from the handler perspective, where if we think about just kind of going off my first thought, where it's talking about the gap between your expected criteria and what the dog's giving you. And my mind went to lumping.
Yes.
And I think sometimes as handlers, right, if we start lumping our criteria and we ask for too many things at one time, and of course, you know, we've all seen this, done this, whatever, right? I think, what do you call it? Lumpy McLumperson or something when you're...
Yeah, no lumpy McLumpersons. No
lumpy McLumpersons. Because once you do that, all of a sudden, something that the dog may not have struggled with if you just picked one piece of the criteria to work on, but now by lumping it all together, now the dog's like, oh my God, this is really hard, right? That I think that can cause a lot of the struggling. So when I'm coaching and I see people, and of course, virtual coaching, right?
Yes.
So I'm looking at either a piece of the search, or I'm looking at the whole search, and maybe I told them to do one thing and they decide to do a lot more in it because, hey, this is a really great place for searches and I might as well put two assignments together or whatever. And all of a sudden, it's really tough on the dog. And you start looking at that and say, this is a reason why I'm always pushing these single head searches, because it starts to help force people to think about separating out what they're trying to work on versus just lumping it all together.
Yeah. And I think the struggle bus, I know for sure when I was posting some of those things about where I was at with Bristol, it was because I was lumping, that she was struggling because I hadn't taken the time to really do those really clear progression plans and finish all of them up like you're supposed to before you put things out in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
So we've spent about 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks going back and putting all sorts of things back where they're supposed to be.
Yep.
And she's much more clear about it now. I still have some other, I'll say she might struggle with duration of searching, but that's also a training issue. And so we're doing some functional assessments tomorrow, which is not tomorrow on the podcast, right? And so, because our timeframes are messed up when
they are a little bit.
And it goes out. So by the time the podcast airs, we will have done those functional assessments and I will now have a whole new different laundry list of things to work on. So it'll be interesting.
I think sometimes with the lumping is that sometimes that you get lumping due to assumptions, right? Like you're assuming that your dog knows something that maybe they aren't as fluent at it as you thought. And then I think there's kind of like it's kind of a de facto lumping where under certain circumstances, your dog should be able to knock it out of the park. But because of some other circumstance, right, they could make the things that the dog would be normally very good at more challenging. And I'm kind of thinking about it. I did a drop-in today, a nose work drop, and I was working with Brava and Powder. And Powder is not used to all of a sudden our temperature went up, right? And we were at 70-something degrees, and we'd been sitting in the 40s. And I did two searches with her back-to-back. And then when I went into the second search, she was already kind of spun up a little bit from the first search. Now, they were hides that were challenging, not too difficult for her, but definitely were on the high end of her capability. Brava, and I was working these known at this point because Brava had already went through there and she did a beautiful job on it. So Powder comes in, and because she was panting, because she was hot, and because it was already at the high end of her capability in terms of those skills, those are certain skills, specific skills that are challenging for her. I saw her struggle more than normal. So there it was kind of like this modifier that made something that normally wouldn't have been too terrible for her. But when you added in the panting, which was unanticipated,
right,
then she struggled.
Yeah. And some of that is sometimes I was talking to a client today about knowing that fine line of letting them struggle because you're inoculating for stress because you are trying to create resiliency.
Yep.
But you can't flood them and then they're over threshold and all sorts of other things. So it's flirting with a really, really fine line.
Yeah. Right. So you really have to be observant and try to see like, what can my dog cope with versus what can't they cope with? And what's going to be the downstream implications of doing this?
Correct. Right.
Powder, I'm just like, okay, I guess we have to work on some conditioning here, sweetheart.
Right.
She was just like, I'm still having fun. But she was just not as effective as I would like.
Right. And some of that is absolutely doable. And it's knowing the difference on when you are over your head. And I think so many people, if you do get in over your head, I think that we have this weird innate thing that we're averse to just pulling the plug.
Right.
And walking the dog back to the car. That we end up doing the whole, well, let's just walk them into the odor. Which goes counterintuitive to everything that we're trying to teach. But because we have such an innate desire to, oh my gosh, let's go ahead and let them be successful because we want them to be successful because the training is now about us and not about them.
Right. Or maybe we paid for like a seminar spot or we
I've been at seminars where I've declined to work my dog when it's my turn because I'm like, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'll watch. Somebody else can. I mean, I actually just did it at training this past weekend for the bird dog stuff. Flare blinked a bird. Here is your bird dog terminology for today.
I'm like, what?
Yeah. So she ran out.
Definition,
please. Smelled the bird. And she's like, there's no narcotics in this bird. It's kind of gross. I'm coming back. And the bird dog world, that's called blinking a bird, where you run out, they run out, they look at the bird and they're like, no. And then you recall them. So she went out, she totally looked at this bird, paw up, full on, it's a critter. I called her back and I sent the radio call out. I'm abdicating the rest of my turn. There were two other marks out there.
Wow. Yeah.
That I could have sent her on. She blew off the 50 yard mark. I'm like, I'm not going to send her out to go do the 300 yard mark when you can't do the 50 yard mark.
Yeah.
Put her right in the truck.
Yeah.
Ran the other two dogs. The next time she got out of the truck, she picked up the bird.
I was thinking about that when I was in the truck. And I want my turn now.
Yeah, watching the other dogs go and having a little bit of a hissy fit.
Yeah, FOMO's real.
Yeah, so it's fine.
And a lot of those times I have to like do things to give myself a moment because I think people don't think that it's always punishing to the dog. And so often when things are going struggle and difficult and not the way that I thought it was going to go, I simply have to take a break. And so it's not even about giving my dog any sort of consequence, but just go to your box, go to your place, go to somewhere. Because I need to get my head right to know what's not working and why this isn't going the way that it should be going.
Yeah.
And I think too, something you said made me think about the yet mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been having to work on that a lot with myself. And it goes back to, it probably just all growth mindset because what I use at school so much. It's been like beat into my soul, I think. So, you know, instead, you know, they can't do this. They can't do it yet. That's the yet mindset. It's just all about the future learning and the future growth and just knowing that we are not robots. Our dogs are not robots. And that embracing that imperfection is important. You know, we're making the progress. We're making mistakes and it's giving us a chance to adjust our training. We can learn from this. We can try different approaches. And it gives me a chance to really discuss with my buddies of whoever I'm working with. It's like, okay, here's the potential now of what can go right and what might go wrong. And I think I'm learning so much from the mistakes and the struggles, because then I can help myself in the future know that that's a possibility that I can then plan for and kind of plan around. And then I'm having less of those struggles in the future by really figuring out my contingency plans and observing where my dog is going to have those difficulties and then making that the focus of my next training plan. So it's just all chances to adjust my training is what I'm really, I guess, seeing now. Mm-hmm. And I think that change in my attitude has absolutely changed my training in this last year, because I'm now celebrating more. And, you know, like Alyssa, we've talked about it in the past, we put the dog in the kennel at the end of the training, no matter how it went. And I still say, thank you for trying your best. Mm-hmm. Like, thank mm-hmm. you for giving me your all,
yep.
even if it's not what I expected. And then I have to always now tell myself, thank you for giving it your all, Wing. Mm-hmm. You did it. It wasn't what you expected. And I just keep saying every time it's a new skill for both of us. We're figuring this out together.
Yeah.
And I think you hit on something is the using the what the dog didn't do and adjusting for your next training session so that you can have that one be successful. And what I see a lot of handlers doing sometimes is they set up problems, and they think they're trying to fix the problem, mm-hmm. but it turns out that they're just in this really weird loop where they aren't actually addressing some of the problems that they have or the struggles that they have, or they're working on too many struggles at once.
Or they don't know what's causing the struggle.
Right.
So
just to let everybody know, the three of us on this particular phone, this particular podcast, have phone a friend options.
Yes.
We absolutely do. We actually have a couple of different phone a friend options. Yes. It's like, oh my gosh, what is going on with this thing?
Yeah.
And so make sure, find your training tribe that you feel safe in to ask, dude, what's going on with this?
Yes. Yes. And I want to also build off of what you were saying in terms of kind of like, they kind of will kind of get into a loop and kind of keep doing, like, basically what they're doing is practicing, right?
Right.
We see this a lot with, and actually I'm going to plug a class that I'm going to be teaching in April. So just listen up on this one, especially like containers. We see people struggle with containers. And so they just keep setting up container search after container search after container search without actually knowing what's causing the issue. This is something that we see a lot in nose work. And so that's the reason why I actually have this class called Container Wizardry. I'm going to be teaching in April, where basically, you know, I looked at the skill of searching containers and sliced and diced that into and every single possible configuration so that you can actually train the pieces rather than just practicing containers. So it's kind of like, that's kind of an example where, you know, if you keep just practicing something, honestly, you're just going to, you're almost compounding the issue.
Yes. You're putting jelly beans in the wrong jar.
Yeah, exactly. You're compounding the issue. Is like the more you practice something, the more you're going to do it. And either you're practicing struggling or you're actually fixing the issue.
Yes.
So Robin, you're going to have to explain jelly beans if people are on your podcast, on your seminar or your webinars.
Okay. So one of the things that I really struggle is when you're teaching virtually and things, you struggle with analogies to get people to have. I'm also a visual learner. So I also really kind of like jelly beans, except for particular colors, but that's okay.
You like jelly bellies or jelly beans?
Jelly bellies.
Yes.
I'm a big jelly belly person.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they're jelly bellies, right? And I actually looked it up. I think you can fit like 480 jelly beans in 1 8-ounce mason jar. Right. Just so you know, you can Google all sorts of stuff. And so when I started thinking about numbers of repetitions, right, there was it's 300 minimum repetitions for an animal, okay, our dog, to begin to really understand the stimuli behavior relationship. That's almost one full 8-ounce jar of jelly beans. That's a lot of jelly beans. Then let's talk about generalizing. And Simon Prinz had this really nice graphic out. The important thing was that I think for his SIT protocol or SIT procedure, it was like a minimum of 780 repetitions up to 1200, right? And so if you did that, that's like 2, if not almost 3, 8-ounce jars of jelly beans on that one behavior. And so then you start thinking about what jelly bean jar are you putting jelly beans in? Is it the one that is for that behavior or is it for the wrong behavior that you keep cueing? And then you start thinking about all of the jelly bean jars that you have to have in sequence to do a chain of behaviors and make sure all of those jelly bean jars and the appropriate connectors are really strong. It made my head hurt.
We're going to end up, I think, on our next episode talking about air scent because you and I had a jelly bean conversation.
Yes, we
about
did.
A refund. So we're going to have to resurface your jelly beans.
Yes, that's perfectly fine. We can do that.
Yeah, we'll make sure we do that.
And I like the 303,000 rule. I think that's a good thing to kind of make sure that we have out there. That idea of skill development, it's 300 repetitions to get the basic bodily memory of a skill. And then it's 3,000 to fully master and embody that skill. So thinking about that, it goes back to when you talked about in your webinar too, about we're not drilling it to death. And it goes back to what Stacy said about if you're doing the same thing over and over and you're struggling. So my question for both of you then is, if someone is struggling and all they know to do is just keep trying and try to make that breakthrough, what's some other advice you could give them?
So I know for me, I like to think about if there is some sort of a struggle, there's usually something going on in the undercurrents. And that undercurrent is sometimes a contributor to whatever the dog or the team is struggling with. in general, and I know there are probably some exceptions to this, but I kind of think about it in terms of a lot of the struggles that I see dogs having in nose work is due to one of four things. It's either focus, it's motivation, it's odor, it's like high commitment, or it's focus, motivation, high commitment, and odor obedience. Oh, independence. Sorry, because the odor obedience and high commitment is about the same thing. So independence. So focus, motivation, independence, and high commitment. And if you are having a struggle, odds are it's due to one of those things. And if you can kind of, so I think a lot of times if you're not even sure what you're struggling with, if you can kind of sit back and ask yourself about those four things and be really truthful with how your dog is doing, if your dog is lacking in one of those, it's going to cause struggles all the way down the line. And so I like to go back to kind of what I call the empirical model of what I expect my dog to exhibit, which is basically our foundations. And those are my four main things.
I agree. I also think that bouncing off your motivation, reinforcement system, and then also that weird nebulous thing that we call relationship,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of a somewhere between a can you read your dog and does your dog like you, which is reinforcement system stuff.
Yeah. Do you have a dysfunctional relationship with your dog?
Right. And I think, and being able to walk through, and I just did a webinar on dumpster fire, you know, how do I define what dumpster fire I have, which actually came about because I believe this whole conversation on struggling, I was like, well, I have to figure out what dumpster fire I'm working with Bristol. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that I didn't really have that much of a dumpster fire. What I really had was a lack of training. But it's how do you set up your problems to actually ask appropriate questions? And dogs can only pretty much give you yes or no answers. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, they don't really lie.
No.
So you just kind of got to be careful because sometimes you ask questions, you don't like the answers, or you didn't set the question up correctly and you get a totally different answer.
Yep.
So I think that really driving down and that skill in and of itself requires people to be able to slice down behaviors instead of lump them.
Yep.
I think you had to break down the problem like you're saying. And I think that also we have to kind of validate too that we are trying because that validation does go a long way. And then that reflection piece. So what feels like it's not working, even starting there, this what feels off and has anything changed? If it hasn't changed in like the second rep, the third rep, then okay, we need to do something a little different. And I think shifting perspective, I do see a lot of trainers that have a, this is how it's done. And getting a fresh perspective is really all it takes sometimes, whether that might be a little walk for you to catch a breather. But the biggest thing we've talked about before is imagining you're giving your friend some advice. You know, what would you suggest if it was your friend doing this? And that so works for me. I mean, so much of the time, I'll just start kind of talking something through with someone. I'm like, okay, my friend's having this problem. And just that different angle. You know, it's the same thing with art. Like when I'm making something, if I take a picture with my phone, it gives you distance from it.
Uh-huh.
And so anything to give you distance from that problem, it helps you find those overlooked pieces.
So we know if you put something and you say asking for a friend, we're like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
And there's always that external support, like having friends, mentors, professionals, that's always going to be the fastest way to give you that fresh perspective. That's, in my opinion, the most valuable insights I always get is from like going to you guys, going from my club. And I think one of the things that we all do so well is we embrace experimentation.
Yes.
Because we're always trying new things, seeing what works. No dog is the same. And we can take from all the little bits and pieces of all the dogs we've worked with and all the handlers we've worked with and kind of put it together to help them. And I think just those are the things that I've really found to help people break through that. We were kind of playing with the idea of the Einstein quote of you keep doing the same thing over and over.
Definition of insanity.
Yeah. And yeah. So we were kind of playing with that idea. And it's the same thing as, like, we imagine, like, the erosion insanity is what Nancy and I called it. And it's that, you know, when the water runs and it creates that divot and it just keeps getting deeper and deeper, and it's just always going to keep going that way. And it's the same thing with the neural pathways in your mind. And if you keep rehearsing that same behavior with your dog, you're just setting it in deeper and deeper for your dog. It's just how our brains work.
Too many black jelly beans in the wrong bottle.
That's it. Just break away from that and give yourself a little bit of space and give your dog a little space too. It's, you'll thank yourself.
And that definitely all goes back to the whole, if things are going south in a handbasket, there is nothing wrong with just looking at the dog and saying, well, gee, that was interesting. Let's go back to the car.
And it's pretty down south, but, you know, it's just not where we want to go.
Right. Yeah. Don't want to go that way. Yeah.
This got me thinking, what if it's always perfect every time you go out?
Well, yens will yell at you first. So
yes.
If you haven't listened to our yens episode, you need to go listen to that right now because your brain will melt.
Right. Because 50, your dog's not supposed to find 50% of its hide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And so my response to that is either A, you're setting your hides too easy, or B, you're walking your dog into everything. And so are you really actually training, or are you making yourself feel awesome?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that kind of went back to, like, I wrote down this other question that I just hadn't asked yet was, can a dog learn without a little bit of struggle?
No.
Stress is good.
Stress is good.
Little bits of stress here and there. People are constantly like, oh, stress is bad. No,
no.
Stress can be good. It's what's going to help you grow.
Yeah. I mean, I go back to, like, so I'm working out and everything, and I'm like trying to get fit and stuff. And Liz keeps, like, upping my workout.
Of course she does, because she's a good personal trainer and we all like to hate them.
Oh my God, so I have these two exercises that kick my butt, right? So I'm doing these, you have to do like a wall sit, and I'm curling two 15-pound weights in a wall sit. And I have to try to do 12 of these. And let me tell you, by the time I get to 10, I want to die. And then by 12, when I put those down, I'm like swearing like these amazing, like, look, oh man, I did it, right? So doing that. And then I've got this other one where I'm sitting in the wall sit and I have two 10-pound weights and I have to lift them up out in front of me, then out to the side and then lower. And then up out in front of me, out to the side and lower with a straight arm. And let me tell you, I'm struggling. But every time I try again, it's a little bit easier.
You can do one more.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Because, like, I actually videoed myself, like, the first night doing the curling the 15 pounds. And I literally had to almost contort my butt. Of course, you probably shouldn't be doing that, but, like, just trying to get that last rep. And I worked out earlier today and I'm like, yeah, that 12th one was hard, but the form was good. And I did them without having to stop. So it's kind of like the struggle actually helps, right?
Well, and it's a muscle. I mean, just
it is.
And whether it's a physical muscle, as you're talking to somebody who's still doing single leg squats to get
those
over knee surgery. They're hard.
Yeah, they're hard.
As I sit here with the tennis ball rubbing out my quad, that you can either build the muscle in the wrong direction using poor form and all sorts of things, or you can use the appropriate form and build it the right way. And so every time you're reinforcing the wrong behavior, you're building the wrong kind of muscle. And
if you're making it too easy and you're just doing, oh, I have these little 2-pound weights, you're not going to get anywhere.
Right. No muscles for you.
My visual friends, the eustress, which is the good stress, is like the campfire. And the distress is like the raging inferno, right?
Oh,
so you
there
have
you
that kind of nice, manageable warmth and the light. And it's, you can kind of put a little more in as you need. You can control the fire. But then when you have that raging inferno, that distress, it's just out of control. It's destructive. It lasts a long time. And that's what I always kind of visualize when I think about stress.
Yeah.
Because that good stress, I mean, it does all the great things for your brain. It enhances your learning. It's going to make the dog more resilient. It's going to help, I mean, performance, absolutely. So all of those things are going to improve with the right kind of stress. And if you don't add any of that eustress, you're really not going to have the quality performer that you probably want. If you're listening to us, I assume that you probably want to have a competitive edge, whether it's in true competition or whether it's performing your job.
Just kind of like hit on it. I had a thought there. I was thinking about, because I've been doing a ladder work a lot with prize, right? And that whole eustress versus distress. So in when we started with her, I went out and I was Robin and showed me how to start on a flat ladder. And she's like, you know, do this. And you have the little planks in between. And at first prize was like, oh, hell no, right? Like that is really hard. And then pretty soon she was like, I can do a flat ladder. And it kind of pushed her just a little bit, but to the point where she had like this, it seemed she got very excited when she was done. She's like, look what I did. And that was what I would consider the eustress, right? But now, like, so for instance, I've had to like back off big time on powder and I'm trying to build other muscle groups with her because she, when I tried the flat ladder with her, she went more into distress. And I'm like, that's just not good. It's just going to scare you. Legs are flying. So I have to figure out other, I have to get a little bit creative to try to teach her that. But I look at Prize, who adding that eustress little by little. I mean, I had the, I had a little giant ladder. It was, I'm up 6 climbs high today, right?
Wow.
So she went up that, up and down that. And then she'd hop off onto the blue barrel, hopping blue barrels all in a row. This is all without a food reward in between. Sitting when I asked her, doing the flat ladder at, I think it was 4 climbs high, sitting there and then going down another ladder, right? So this is the same dog that was like, I can't do this. This is scary. I don't, but like adding that little bit of eustress, right, has built her confidence.
Right. And as you're adding all of those little examples of eustress, then you're also allowing her to do all of the physical muscle building that she needs to be able to handle so it doesn't turn into distress.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the things that I see with the FEMA dogs, right?
Yeah.
Because we're doing rubble pile work. We're doing all of that sort of stuff. I'm going to send you up on the pile, which requires all of this physical dexterity and core work and everything else. And if you're not working that on a regular basis, no wonder my poor dogs will get sore. Like after I'm blessed to go back on a rubble pile, Nico is going to have to go into actual physical training because we haven't been on a rubble pile for a while and he'll hurt himself because he's not very bright.
Right. No, but like I was just even like, I did a search out in the woods the other night and there was this big pile of logs and here's this dog that I've been doing all the ladder work. She's coming back and she's like, well, I don't need to go around that. It was like 4 logs with like these gaps in between and she's like, boop, 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 over it. Right. And the canine coordinator who was with me, he's like, well, she's not gonna have a problem with the agility part. You know, but this is a dog that, you know, we started last year, like out at your farm.
Right.
I mean, that would have been a non-starter for her.
Right.
It's just really fascinating, the whole concept of eustress versus distress, because it is a go either way, depending upon the training decisions you make.
Correct.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff.
Yeah. It would be interesting to find out and think about, as we were talking through this on our little Facebook group that we were, or Facebook chat, it was interesting to realize how we still really started thinking about this of, okay, what I consider a struggle, some people would be super duper excited to have my struggles.
Yes.
And I get that. And sometimes that's also a refreshing thing too, to kind of sit back and go, okay, I need to get out of my head a little bit and understand that it's perfectly okay for me to have this struggle and it's not the end of the planet.
It goes back to like what Crystal was saying with like kind of celebrate a little bit more.
Yes.
I think.
I think so too.
It really put my mind there because Checkmate's on crate rest until mid-May.
That is just...
And that's been a real, real struggle. He's been on crate rest basically since late October.
I know.
Poor guy.
That isn't even something that you can do anything about. It's just more about just mental...
Yeah.
Like your own...
Both of us are going crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Poor guy. Oh my gosh.
That's why I try to be positive about growth mindset stuff. But
yeah.
This
that's hard.
Is a hell of a struggle. I mean, this has been one of the hardest things
I can't even.
So I've been having a hard time reframing it and being positive about it. And I'm doing silly things now with him, like trying to get him to take a deep breath. Like I'm shaping taking deep breaths, you know? I mean, come on, we can't do anything. It's just crazy. Yet. We can't do anything yet.
Yet. Yeah. It's hard for him, I would imagine, because his hips feel awesome.
They do. He wants to do the things and nothing until May.
Yeah.
And nothing till May because we need his foot to heal so he doesn't have to do another surgery. So
2 more months.
Okay. So actually that we can maybe have listeners suggest to Crystal things to teach Checkmate.
No, I don't need that.
Okay.
Okay.
We've done crate rest so much. I'm at that point where I'm like, no, we've done the things and we're still doing the things. I'm tired of doing the things. That's more just me voicing my struggle of, I know what we can do. We have lots of little things we can do. We want to go bite. We want to go run. Yeah. We want to go jump. Go. Yeah.
Right. I understand that struggle. I was going to say, my biggest struggle right now is that my knee gets very tired when I'm standing on concrete.
I bet.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And after this particular podcast, we worked cows yesterday.
Yeah.
So that was standing in the cattle barn for 5 hours.
Oh.
Working cows and all of that sort of stuff. So I'm glad I have a massage scheduled for tomorrow. My other struggle is that Crystal's in heat and Dash has lost his mind. So
yeah,
that's my other little struggle.
Stacey, what's your struggle?
My struggle. I'm in a really good spot right now.
You
actually though, my struggle is, you know, when you're like, I'm a beginner again in a lot of ways. So here I am. I'm like, my dog's doing amazing with her searching and with the air scent stuff. And I'm like trying to figure out what I don't know. And so my struggle is trying to, like, I don't know what I don't know. And for someone who doesn't deal well with what I don't know, you know, I don't know what I don't know. That's my own struggle right now. It's coming, but
it'll come.
But it's just one of those things where I'm trying to like picture everything. And I have like this like gray, foggy stuff, like where I just like don't know.
Big nebulous area.
What that's supposed to look like, or that part's kind of hard for me. So I guess that's what it is. It's more just trying to put myself in to try to figure out how to connect the dots in some ways.
Okay, ladies, do you want to do takeaways or we just shared struggles? So I think we're okay.
I think that's pretty much a takeaway.
I think so too.
I would say one takeaway is it is a human experience. It is a dog experience. It's universal. It's good to embrace them. And sometimes it's good to reframe them, that we can kind of have the connotation of struggle being a bad thing, or it could be that it's a challenge. It could be that it's part of a learning curve. I love reframing it now for myself when I realize that I have a challenge, that it's just something I get to teach. It's not that I have to fix it, but I get to teach it. It's part of this amazing problem-solving journey. And I think we're better off when we think about it as part of the journey and part of the experience.
Yes. And I think one of the things I had posted something about that started this whole conversation was I had posted a quote about when you change the lens at what you're looking at something, what you're looking at changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we kept that in mind for all of our struggles, that would help everybody.
So my takeaway is that if you feel like you're struggling, try not to struggle alone. It goes back to the idea of a training tribe.
Yes.
It can be really hard to diagnose and to fix things by yourself. If you can reach out to somebody, you will phone a friend. And even if you're just kind of, you just want to talk it out with them and just kind of get some other ideas, opinions, it can make a big difference.
It can. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. We will see you next time and go train.
Canine Detection Collaborative. We have
appreciate the time you spend with us. If you liked this episode, not only should you follow us so you don't miss the next one, but please also rate and review us in your favorite podcast app. For info on collaborating with us, go to K9DetectionCollaborative.com. That's K9DetectionCollaborative.com, where you can find our socials and pick up our latest monthly freebie. Join us again to talk training in the next episode.